Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fozcast. On today's episode, we have got Phil Jejelka. This guy can talk for England, but it is a world-class episode, I promise you. We spoke about the four professional appearances as a goalkeeper. You've got to hear this story. The time that he nearly signed for Arsenal in a £13 million transfer from Everton and the unromantic, abrupt way his football career ended. Up the Fozcast. Right, Phil, welcome to the Fozcast. Before we start the podcast, can we clarify what your name actually is, please? It's of Polish descent,
it's but Phil.
How do you pronounce it? Because I call you Jags, people call you Philip, Phil, Jagielka. What is it?
It's full titles, Philip Jagielka.
Jagielka.
And if I was probably saying a bit more Polish, it'd probably be Jagielka. So, but we don't obviously use that sort of tones.
Can I call you Phil still, yeah?
Jags is easiest.
Jags is easiest.
I've got a funny story, actually.
Go on.
Checked in once, going to play Preston away. I got told off by a Polish receptionist for not pronouncing my own name correctly.
No, come on.
So you imagine, I've tried to correct people for most of my life or got to the point, but now you've sort of accepted it's Jagielka, it's Jags. Now I'm getting told off by someone when I'm checking, asking for my room key, and she's refusing to give it to me because I've not said Jagielka.
So you'd have got to the hotel, yeah, and obviously where they have all the envelopes laid out and they've got the names, and she's sort of standing there, yeah, and you'd have gone, Jagielka. Yeah, yeah. And she'd have gone, no. No.
And then she's like, she's almost hovering it in front of me and saying, can you say it properly, please? And I'm stumped because obviously, so obviously she explains that she's Polish, and then I'm trying to say, well, you've not tried to check in the previous 200.
Yeah.
And they're not looking for a why. Do you know what I'm looking for? Do you know? So,
yes.
But no, so it's Jagielka, but the way I've explained it to my kids are that's Jagielka's my stage name.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's what everyone's called me. People have tried to change it. I've had Jagielski once, which must mean someone's just read the first bit and just thought I was Polish and just chucked
Russian.
It. Yeah,
Russian.
Yeah, just put something on the end of it.
Which
my dad I feel sorry for, because obviously they followed me all over the country. And if you get him like car park passes or tickets, he's got to openly say his name wrong.
Yeah.
And I think for the first 4 or 5 years, he refused to. So he's got my mum in the passenger seat whacking him, saying, just say it.
Leaning over him, saying it properly.
And he's like, no. And I'm like, come on, dad, like,
Make life easier
yourself,
exactly. Make life easier.
And in the end, obviously, he plays ball now.
Right, Jags, retired from football, completely done, yeah? We done?
Yeah, I wasn't sure I was ready. I still sort of put my hat out there for the summer, but there wasn't too many bites. The phone was quite cold, but
yeah. As
a 40-year-old, well, just turned 41 by the time it got to August, you sort of expect it.
So you say you sort of expect it, but when August comes and you haven't got a club yet, nothing sorted, are you at the point where you go, right, I'm no longer willing to sort of, it's like ratting around for a club. I'm no longer willing to rat around for a club anymore. I need to make a decision here and now.
Yeah, and it's strange. So you have obviously a transfer window shuts and you almost become, you should or you can come more important because other teams can't sign people that have been signed to another club. So you are technically part of a pool of players. That if they have a couple of injuries or something happens, a fallout, you're there as a list. So you sort of keep yourself going for like another month, but then you're only a month or so away from Christmas and the January window opens. So that's where you are. And for me, my personal, like, what I was looking for is, obviously I was settled in the area I live. I've got my kids and my family around. Obviously I'm not looking to try and create a career and go somewhere. I'm not looking to go weird and wonderful anywhere.
Yeah, live anywhere you've never lived before.
So in a way, it was a selfish of me of the parameters I set as far as sort of probably location-wise. And even same again, I had to find a manager that was prepared to not need me to train at 100% for 3 or 4 days of the week, you know, turn up, still play my role and do whatever. Because for me, after I got into my late 30s, it wasn't anything really to do with training. It was game time.
Yeah.
And I stacked that up. I think in the last two seasons I played in the Championship, I played 90 games.
Yeah.
I was 39 and 40 years old. Like, they were 90 minutes. Yeah. I don't come on for five. As much as I'd like to be a jinky left winger, I don't come on for like 5 or 10 minutes. I play games. And that was what I got to. And I'd say I was disappointed with not finding anywhere else and probably the way the journey ended. But I also accept it. I got a chance when I was a young lad, you know, many moons ago, many decades ago, because that was the same process there. The older players got moved on, they didn't get extended, and then maybe the younger players are getting pushed through. So I understand the way football works. It obviously just wasn't quite as nice being on the other end of the spectrum.
Did you think that, I don't know if you, I'm pretty sure you were the same, Ben, when you left Watford, but when you finished Stoke, did you assume that the phone would ring maybe a bit more than it did?
I imagined I'd have more conversations with people because I was getting to the point where managers are getting younger, I think statistically in the Championship especially, you know, first team coaches and managers are younger. I'd have expected to have a conversation and to see what, to pick my brains basically.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean, I'm not even talking finances like I said before, it's more about how, what they can give me as a football club, when they'd expect me to train, what they'd want me, would they want me to play games, would they want me to sort of help out on sort of the coaching side, the philosophies or whatever. But I suppose it takes a brave man. So if you look at my latter end of my career, Wayne was the one who gave me a chance at Derby, Wayne Rooney. And because the type of character he is, he wasn't bothered. He needed people.
Yeah.
It was all hands to the pump, especially at the situation with Derby, obviously going to admin and blah, blah, blah. And then I did well there and I showed I could still play. And then O'Neill took me at Stoke because he was struggling again, but he'd been an international manager, a little bit more old school, and he understood. We had a good conversation and a chat before I signed, and he was prepared to sort of not take a gamble in the day. He weren't paying me great money. He wasn't doing it for that, but obviously it was a gamble that I wasn't going to break down or I was going to be useful. Then I continued that, but when obviously the time came up at Stoke, I was a little bit surprised that my name must have been on the available list, and I'd have expected maybe a couple of conversations. Maybe those conversations wouldn't have gone how I wanted or how they wanted, but I was expecting it. But like I say, it's football. It's just they have a process, and maybe sometimes when you're as old as I was when I was playing, and you're similar age to the manager, they get concerned that you're after their job.
Really?
Yeah, they do. I've got no coaching badges. I can't do it. And I think that helped me a little bit because I'm sure some of the managers would, you know, like,
especially if you're a name.
Threatened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They feel threatened by
it. And they don't know me as a character, as a person. So all they know me as Jagielka. Yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah. That's all they know me as. And they might think that I'm so hungry to get myself in there.
Foot in the door. Exactly. You'll stab them in the back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which I wouldn't be the first person or one of the last person to do it. But that's not what I was about. My plan was I wanted to play games. I didn't want to just go and be involved in the football. I wanted and my desire was to play week in, week out. Yeah. I've had that desire since I was 18. Nothing's ever changed. I never wanted to be a squad player. Never happy sitting on a bench and picking up a wage or whatever. That wasn't me. And fortunately or unfortunately for me, my body didn't let me down. I was still able to get around the pitch. I wasn't picking up injuries, not anything major. Whereas I think if it had, it maybe would have been easier just to accept and go, well.
So how does it sit with you then that one game at Stoke City was finally your last game of football? Do you know what I mean? Nobody knows that's coming. And there's so many nice stories out there of these footballers who have fantastic careers and they say farewell with a month or 2 months or 3 months to go of the season. It's like, I'm going to retire.
Get
and
subbed
it's all
off
beautiful.
In the 80th minute of their final game.
Standing ovation and celebration. And then all of a sudden, you've played your last game and you don't know it's your last game.
Well, let's go back to Stoke because obviously it was my last game. It was strange because we'd had letters and emails saying, look, everyone's going to find out this the day after the season.
Letters and emails?
Yeah.
Well, how do you know what I mean? Surely
but that's how they do it. Then you have to book an appointment and blah. So then you have to come in. It's different, obviously, for me. It's so unpersonal or whatever. But I understand it. It's the way you've got to tell. So everyone had an appointment. So it wasn't just the lads that were up for contract. It was the ones that were coming back for next year. They'd be given like a plan, an off-season plan.
Yeah, sure.
Where you are in the plans for next season, whether you can look for a new club, whether you're going to be new captain, blah, blah, blah. That's what conversations happen. So we all got it and we were like, surely that can't happen. So there's even lads that weren't in the squad that had pretty openly been told that they probably wouldn't be getting a deal. It was obvious. But they still had to come. Or so they've been fined. Or, do you know, like, it's just the way it worked. So obviously I'm speaking to my agent. I'm saying, look, I'm an experienced pro now. I was obviously still playing. I said, look, like, give me a little bit of a heads up, some sort of like wink, nod or whatever, what's going on, and get my head around. I'm not going to throw one in. I'm not going to play.
Yeah, sure.
And if it's nice, I'd like to take the family down. We were playing Watford away, funny enough. But there was nothing. And you can sort of sense, but no one was being given much. So we played. Obviously, we lost. I've come in afterwards.
You played the game?
Played. Come off. And it was just like, wow. Like, I don't even know how to explain. I sat in the changing room afterwards, just like numb.
Yeah.
Sat next to Morgan Fox, like, we're quite close friends. It was, well, ended up being his last game for Stoke as well. Changed shirts, you know, just as you do sometimes we did, you know, end of the season, and just got on the bus back to Stoke, and it was in the next day. And then you come in, and you can't really feel that positive. You come in, I went up in there, then obviously waited my turn. Next thing you know, went up the night. Neil told me it was a tough decision, blah, blah, they're going to go try and start afresh with pretty much everyone that was out of contract. I was like, okay. It was like, there's nothing I could do or say about it. But then obviously I've drove home, and I wouldn't say it angered me, but I was like, a little bit of a piss take.
Yeah.
Like, I've played as much as I can with you. I don't think he really wanted to play me anyway, because he wanted to obviously change things himself. Yeah. But he was left with obviously whatever happened. And then spoke to your mum and dad, your parents, whatever. And it's like, no, okay, I'll go away on holiday, kept myself fit. Spoke to your agent, said, look, like, it sort of fuels the fire to want to keep doing them treadmill runs or whatever.
Something to aim for, isn't it? Yes.
I think I'm sort of thinking, like, yeah, I'll find another club and come back and score here next season. World's Joe, or whatever. But it didn't happen. And unfortunately for me, as happy and buzzy as I am with my career, every single goodbye I've had has been pretty shambolic.
Wow.
From getting relegated at Sheffield.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was going to leave. Just left the pitch, and then obviously that was
the season Tevez and Mascherano season, wasn't it?
And then there was all sorts of carnage over the summer where we didn't know if they were going to get points deductions, dual ownership, and whatever. So then, what am I doing? Everton, which will still be probably the hardest one to take. Me and Bainesy's contracts were up at the end of the season, and there was rumours whether we were both going to get like an extra year or, you know, help.
How long have you been at Everton at this point?
This is my 12th season.
Wow.
Club captain.
Wow.
And there was rumours, you know, like, do some leadership groups make sure we go forward? You might not play as much. I'm sure the wages would have been less, blah, blah, blah.
But there was a conversation to be had.
A conversation, and they were quite open about it. And then it comes to the last game of the season, and me and Bainesy were both on the bench. And then I remember Marco turning around and putting me on. So I've whispered to Bainesy, I was like, oh, it looks like I'm not staying then. Do you know, like, so then obviously Seamus came in the armband, I came on. It was a nice reception and stuff, but none of my family were there for the day.
Yeah.
And
so you're saying he brought you on because he knew this was your... It was almost like he was giving you a farewell.
He covered his bases.
Yeah.
And then season finishes, it's fine. You go home and it's like you're having conversations, speaking to the chief exec, and they're saying, look, they were thinking we were trying to sign Kurt Zouma on a permanent transfer. Look, if we get him, we're probably not going to go along the lines of you.
Mm.
Never sign Kurt. There's a release list that I think comes, I think it's like the 8th of June, where they have to publicly announce who's getting retained and whatnot. So I just got a phone call the day before. And you sort of know, you know, in deep down your heart it's coming, but it's not nice. And that was my club and whatever. And I'd gone back to Goodison probably to play and whatever. I came on, which was nice for Sheffield. We won 2-0 like the next season. But I'd not been back to watch for a while. And I think it did... It hurt. I understand the way football was, but for me, again, all it would have taken was a conversation.
It's a conversation. I don't even think that's a conversation between the manager and you. I think that's somebody that's higher up, that's been in that club, that has some real
Is transitionally, the lot was happening upstairs.
Yeah.
So Tim Howard had a nice send-off, Phil Neville, David Moyes. Like, these people had some... Like, I think Leon Osman had something similar.
Yeah.
And so did Tony Abbott, but... Not saying they had the ability. They both had testimonials, so at least they had a day.
Good chance to say goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. But then it must be a common theme. So obviously, I went to Sheffield United. Then it was COVID. Then I went to Derby. Then I had to leave. I played a game. I didn't even know I had to leave, but my contract couldn't get renewed there. So then didn't say bye to Derby fans. And obviously, with Stoke fans, I didn't know I was leaving. So basically, it was a pattern along the scene. So. That's probably one aspect of my career, other than not playing in a major final and not winning anything. The goodbyes were pretty rancid.
And with the chief, we touched on it earlier on, but like with the chief exec, for example, you'd think that there'd be that football person at the club that would kind of sit down and go, this guy's been 12 years, club captain and everything. Yeah. Let's just give him the respect that he deserves and say, if we get Zouma, then it's probably not going to happen. But I think to your point, Phil, is... A lot of the clubs now, there's so much change and to and fro. Who is that person at the club? Because there might be somebody at the club, but they probably aren't in the know enough and close with the contract side to be able to have that conversation.
They've made it as a business decision. If we get this, this means this, and whatever. But that's not what the actual situation. It wasn't a business. Like, I'd given up 12 years. Do you know, like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, they pay me. We've done really well. I'm not playing in, like, but I'm saying, fact of the matter is, you know, we've given a lot. But say, it does hurt. And even when I speak about it now, it annoys me a little bit. But I can understand it. And I know why. It just would have been nice if it wasn't me.
Is that? But it's kind of a bit scary of the older you get in football, the less kind of, like, everyone's a human being. Everybody surely should just be treated the same. But it's almost like as you get older, you haven't got that value attached to you anymore. So it's like,
you're a commodity.
You know,
you are literally an object.
And then you've got fans who are always talking about loyalty and this player handed in a transfer request.
Works both ways.
If you see it from the way that clubs deal with players is nowadays, it's just you're a commodity. You're a player. You're not even a person to them anymore. It's what value has he got? What's it going to cost us? And that's all there is to it, isn't it?
What about being 40 as well, though? So obviously, I think it's very similar in terms of your circumstances. When you're 40 in this release list, which we want to talk a little bit more about, but when you're 40 years old, is there a perception that he's been released, he's left the club, and he's 40? Are you automatically almost disregarded?
I was at 36, 37, let alone... I know how hard it was at 37 to get a club.
Mm.
Do you know? And the strange thing was, I'd not played as much. So if you'd look at 37 to probably 34, say so 3 seasons, I'd probably played 20 games, 25 games.
Was it a little niggle?
I wasn't fancied at Everton, so they'd got other players. And I went to a Sheffield team that finished eighth or whatever. And, like, my role was different there. It was basically, in a nice way, because I got on with everyone. If Jags wasn't playing, the defence is keeping clean sheets and doing well. And I really enjoyed it because I trained hard. I had created really good relationships with the other centre-halves that were playing. Dipped in and out for a few games, but it was fine. That was the only time I actually enjoyed not playing, you know, because I was still fully part of it. And even some of the lads that hadn't played at that level were coming to me and asking questions, or in training, we'd be having... So I was almost like a coach.
How important is that job role, though? Because I know exactly the job role you're talking about, but how important is it to have them players around? And you would take pride in that, wouldn't you?
Well,
you'd take so much pride.
Sheet after the game, I would feel like I could come into the conversation.
Yeah.
When you're competing for a place, naturally, if they've done better and they're doing better, you feel a...
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Not resentment, but I'm not going to get a chance next week. But that wasn't what it was about. And I enjoyed it because a lot of these lads had not played at that level and they played at League One to Championship to whatever. Mm. So it was being part of their journey. I'd like to think now if we had them here, they would give me a good character reference. Well, it's easier to go flip reverse it and say, I'm way better than he is. I've done this, done this, done this. Why is he playing?
Mm.
But that wasn't the team, the morale and stuff we had. It was very much, what can we do to stay positive and make sure we stay in the division?
And feel part of the team.
Then obviously the next season, COVID, didn't play as much. So now I've had 3 seasons of very limited football. I'm now 36, 37 years old. People think that's because I can't...
Yeah, can't play.
They don't go and ask for, like, how many K you've covered in training and extra runs you've done. Mm. They just see it as game time. Whereas if I was lucky enough, I got on well with the fitness coach and things like that, and he would happily give my data, my speeds, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not top of the class, but what I'm saying, I've almost got to prove that I'm not bottom of the class.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so, like, you know. But then obviously Wayne said, look, like, Jags, I don't even know if I can pay you any money or come, but come and do a pre-season. So I did a bit of a pre-season with him. There's a few of us down there, a few older experienced pros, and I loved it. Again, I was in that. We probably had 8 lads under 22 playing in the first team football that hadn't played in front of crowds yet. Do you know that? That's what it
all through COVID. It's totally different, isn't it?
It excited me because they were really good, the young lads, with you, where sometimes young lads can be hard work, but the lads at Derby respected you enough, still bantered me enough. You know, it was a really good thin line. And we did really well under the circumstances. But like I said, the phone wasn't ringing and saying, can you come here? And we didn't sign somewhere because they couldn't afford the wages or blah, blah. Like, it was literally, what's the point in signing him? Like, we might as well go and get someone at 22 that we can develop. That's normally a motto of some teams.
Can I tell you my theory I've got?
Is this your over 30 theory?
Yes, it's my over 30 theory. Listen to this, right? If I was to run a football club, right, I would love to do it a certain model. Is I'd only sign players that are over 30, They would be on year, 2 year contracts maximum.
Yeah.
Keep them hungry as well. But I know that I would only sign the good players. Uh-huh. I'd sign the good people.
You're sort of doing what I would see as a sort of a Neil Warnock blueprint.
There you go.
For his earlier manager years, when so it's going to sound really bad. Signing, what I would say, is like the reject. So you're signing people now that have had a bit of a career and either haven't fulfilled it or have gone quiet, gone cold. So now you pull them in and say, look, can't offer you what you've been getting paid previously, but I'll tell you what, I can offer you an opportunity.
Yeah.
Here's a bonus if we do this and this.
And if you've got a point to prove.
Yeah, point to prove.
If you've got a point to prove,
But the character needs to be right.
Yeah.
You need to do your due diligence and make sure that guy isn't going to turn up late.
Down tools.
Yeah, down tools. You need that guy now. He's been desperate for a chance, but no one wants to now because they think he's a has-been.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, like you say, over 30, you would get that. And then more often than that, if you get two or three of them in the same changing room, they then run your changing room.
Of course they do.
They keep things going the way you want it to. And before you know it, you've got a team of, say, 7 out of 10s, 8 out of 10s, arguably near the best part of their physical condition, maybe just past it. Depends how you look at football now. But it's easy. But the only issue you've got then, you've got to sell to the owner, is that basically when these people are finished with
there's
you,
no say, there's
they're
no
worth
saleability.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So...
But wages are down in the first instance.
But and where's your club performing?
Yeah.
So you're okay performing in a different division further down, a lower part of the division, but producing 5 million, depends, 5, 10, 15 million pounds worth of talent, and your club's running and the sustainability of your club's brilliant, or you're in the playoff contenders.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah. And potentially going up a division, or actually you're getting, instead of getting 10,000 people through the turnstiles, you're getting 15.
Yeah.
So there's always pros and cons. And for me, I think the best mixture is a bit of both.
Yeah.
But like you said, I truly believe, well, look what Chelsea have done. Yeah. Chelsea have gone pull-ups. Anyone over 28 is not any good.
No. Bunch of kids.
Which is amazing. But now they've got, when things are going great, you've seen them, they've performed amazing in some games, they'll go and win the game. When things are going bad, you wouldn't, I don't know what the stats are. I can't imagine they've turned many games around this season.
No chance.
I can't imagine they have because they've not had it yet. They've not had the downfalls and the hits.
They haven't taken them hits yet to learn how to deal with them and to turn it around.
But so that's basically what I was dealing with as you got older. And I can understand it because clubs want to make money and they look at a pattern that maybe other clubs have done higher up than them. Even say if you look at Brentford's got to be the one because they've gone through the divisions and they've got younger players in and sold them on continually. Brighton, you could say the same. They've gone through the divisions. And that's what I think too many clubs are trying to copy, when you've got to realise where you are in the country, what you can attract, and what do you actually want to do. Is it you want to be the best you can as a club, or are you just a developing club?
Yeah.
Or do you know, like, so...
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with you, but it'd be hard to have everyone over 30, but I think there's got to be an element of...
So are we starting this veterans team or not?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes or no?
Yeah, definitely.
But look at what Luton have done, right? It does make me smile, and I know maybe Ross Barkley's a slightly different circumstance, but look at what Chelsea have spent, right?
Yeah.
And now there's talk of Ross Barkley getting into the England team. I saw an article this morning about him, Ratcliffe wanting him at Man United. And you do kind of scratch your head, but I want to talk about this release list. So this release list, Phil, is this... You said about it being released at a certain date. Does this get circulated around every professional club?
Yeah, so I think it's more to do, do you know, when a person either is offered a contract or not offered a contract, they're going to turn it down. So the clubs need to put in writing and send it to the FA or wherever it is. It's basically, we've either offered this person a contract. Because don't forget, you can get offered a contract at the end of the season and it can be all somewhere where they decide whether they're going to take it or then, especially younger players, if it's going to be compensation. Younger players go abroad, so there's no compensation. There's so many different things. But as far as the older players go, it's to let every other club know that basically they're available for free. So now they can't get done for tapping up or, do you know, anything like that. It's basically, we've almost washed our hands of them. They're free to speak to whoever they want to. There's no coming back from it.
So if you're like a championship club or something like that, or a club with limited resources, that's your shopping list.
Yeah, that's a shopping
list. But you also know that, it's not just come to yours and then you're going to have to... You get the same day as everyone.
Yeah.
But that's what happens even under 15s, under 16s, under whatever. They have to do the same. As a young kid, it's obviously worse because you imagine how many bits of poaching and stuff they're getting.
Yeah, I bet.
So if they give the release list, and a lot of them I know because my son's doing it, under 16s, they give you before Christmas. If he hits fire after Christmas, they can't all of a sudden turn around and say, no, I'm not releasing him. We want to keep him, offer him something. But he's decided to go somewhere else. And they'd be trying to get compensation off the club that are trying to take, you know, so it's just they're trying to make it as open and as honest as possible at every level, that basically make a decision. You want the player, you don't want the player. If you want the player, then that might be a bit more complicated. But if you don't, that's him. You have to hand in his player registration and then he's available. And like you say, if you're on a budget, especially now we're starting up our own team. We'll wait for that list and we'll just see. Highlight everyone who's over 30 and then that's where we go and buy
the good
team.
Land list.
Exactly, yeah.
I've got a question for you both, right? Let's say 39, 40 years old. At that point in your career, would you trial for a team? Would you go and train for a week
I
for
did
the
at
team?
Derby.
You did?
I did technically. I didn't go there with a... I went there to do pre-season and for me to look at them as much as them to look at me. But okay. It was the easiest trial because without being nasty, I didn't really care the outcome. Mm. If that was me done, I had an okay career, it was fine. But this last time round, I wasn't prepared to go on trial.
Right.
I'd done 90 games. That's 45 games a season for two seasons.
Yeah, that's shown.
I was good or I was bad or I was whatever. I wasn't prepared to, whereas previously, you couldn't get me to play three games on the spin, you know, in the last couple of years. So I understood where it was. But there, I was like, what do I need to prove? Like, and the way the world is as well at the moment, we all wear GPS for training, for games and all sorts. So if I've got to go and get something sent from Stoke to whatever, they can send it and they can see exactly. I think I was, this is a funny start, I didn't think I'd be used to it. I think I was third highest on availability list at Stoke last season. 85% availability.
Right.
And I'm 40.
Yeah.
I played, so it wasn't like I was available, and the only reason I didn't get injured is because I didn't play.
Oh.
So my availability was, so I probably had, I think I had either an ankle knock and I think I had a hamstring strain last, I missed like four games.
The beauty of being 40-year-old and still playing that many games, the only reason why you can do that is because you learn your body so much better than what you did when you were younger. You know when you're tired, when you're fatigued, when to rest it, when to push it, when you can play, when you can't play, and you'll get yourself to Saturday and you'll be good to go. You might have to have the Tuesday off. You might have to have Wednesday off. But
it got
you'll
to
be
the
good
role,
to go.
But even that, so I'd have training off, so they go into small-sided games and a lot of twisty and turny ones and explosive stuff. So we'd have a conversation and I'd be like, cool. So then I'd go and do box-to-boxes or do some laps. I wouldn't have the day off. I remember when you were doing yours, but you'd do something physical that wouldn't harm what the main goal was for me. The main goal is not to see how good I can be in training at 40 years old. The main goal is to make sure I help the team out on a Saturday or Tuesday and Saturday, Tuesday, whatever the hell it is. And that's where Stoke were fantastic with me. So they almost planned the session where I'd do a bit of it and then even like a young lad would come up and take my place in the seven-a-sides or whatever. I want to play seven-a-sides. I want to score over kicks and score past Fozzie and celebrate in his face. That's the excitement. I miss the fun side of sessions. I'd still have to do the hard work, long possessions and things, but I realised that there's no point in me coming in a Thursday.
There's a risk
my hips,
there.
My
there's
hips and knees are still in. It's killing. And now I'm on a race against time to be able to then get on a bus and travel to Cardiff. Yeah. And then before you know, I'm waking up Saturday thinking to myself, I'm again through this game. Don't get wrong. Normally wake up on a Saturday still quite stiff. And anyway, but I'm saying extra. So there's like Fozzie said, there's an element of you being comfortable knowing what suits you. But then you've also got a manager. And not just a manager, the coaches and the people around him that can accept it. Because some people can see it as me
taking cheating a day away, off.
Or taking a day off. Where, and then the funny thing is, when I didn't play, it was harder because they'd want to try and get more fitness work into me on the early part of the week.
Yeah.
But then if someone got suspended or injured, they've almost ruined me by trying to make me catch up for the Saturday. Yeah. So the normal theme is if you don't play, you'll do extra runs after the game or you'll do an extra hard session on a Monday. But so the worst time for me, there was like a four-month period where I didn't really play or 3 months where I was in and out of the team. They couldn't really catch me up or not punish you for not playing, but you know what I mean? Make you do the extras. Yeah. And I think they struggle to realise it's like, well, he's not playing, but he's also not doing the extras
working. As well, yeah. But they get it in the head that you're just robbing a living, basically.
But
yeah.
I'm saying you can take me inside the gym, you make me do boxing for an hour where I'm literally going to be sick. If you wanted to get that hit in me, but there's no point ruining my legs.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Like cycling, the watt bike, or whatever you want to do, you can find ways. I'm not trying to get out of doing hard work.
I'm just telling you, get you
in the best position you can for Saturday.
And even if that's on the bench, but I've had to come on after 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, No point putting me on. I said, I need to tell him again, if you're going to work me hard, there's no point putting me on the bench when I can hardly sit down. Yeah, there's no point. Yeah. Imagine me trying to sit on the bench for 6 minutes. Exactly.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing you said there, and it just made me go off piste a little bit, and I'm thinking about it, is when you said go on trial. So one thing we were talking about a few weeks ago, Jags, is Jesse Lingard. Now we know he's signed for the team in South Korea, which is great, and hopefully he goes and does really well out there. But there was a massive period where he was without a club, and we were talking about it on this show, actually, where we said, if I was Jesse Lingard, I'd get in touch with half a dozen Premier League clubs and I'd say, can I come on trial to you? Can I come and train with you? And I will show
didn't
you...
Didn't he go to West Ham and do that?
I don't know if he did. I don't know if he really did or not, or whether it was a token gesture or what. But I think I would have made it very well known to them clubs. I wouldn't come out in the media.
Not you're desperate, but you were open to...
I'm willing to eat a bit of humble pie. Yeah. I'm willing to let my ego go, and I'm going to say, right, I will come and show you that I'm fit as a fiddle, and I'm a team player, and I'm professional,
well, that's what
Andros
did at... I mean, it was a little bit different, because he had 2 years of basically being injured. Yeah. But like, he went there... He was on the podcast, worked his bollocks off, got the short-term deal, got the extension to the end of the season.
He's done fantastic.
And he's done
the only thing I'll say about Jesse is we don't know what he's been fed.
Yeah.
So when you've got an agent or someone's looking after you, if they're basically saying, no, don't worry, we've got this lined up, or we've got this amount, I've got this club, they definitely want to take you, and it's X amount. Yeah, but what about this one that said interested now, but they'll only give you this or that. Do you know, like, and it's difficult. That's when you've got to rely on your friends and family behind you, or... If you can take a step back and go, well, hang on, what do I need out of my next deal? And I don't know Jesse well, but I presume the financial part of it, he probably doesn't need. Yeah. So like he's going to get financially rewarded wherever he goes anyway. Yeah. Some might be bigger than others, but that's not what I don't think he need. I think he needed to go and play football and showcase how good of a footballer he's been, because he'd not had that. But it doesn't seem like that was how he was being sold. Yeah, if you look at like... If he's on an auto trader, you can imagine that the advert isn't what, you know, like what he needed. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's basically... Only when you peek under the bonnet and it's like, what? That's not it.
But he's a fan. I'm disappointed I'm not watching Jesse Lingard. Yeah. Like, he was getting to the stage, it was probably more so at his West Ham times.
Yeah, West Ham one,
where you were seeing that player that did so well for Man U.
Yeah.
And you were hoping he would find another club in the Premier League that he would then become the star player or one of the first names in their team sheet, progress and stay around the England squad. It's fizzled out, but like you said, the reset button. So you look at, what Ross has done. Ross's stock went from there, Ross Barkley, he's gone to Nice, had a bit of a
bad
torrid time of it. So now his agent or his people have found him a club that's in the Premier League.
Yeah.
If he'd have gone to a top championship team, it'd have been the same sort of, oh, he's there. Do you know the same thing as what Hull is? Luton is. But he got a Premier League team and he's worked himself into not only being one of the first names on the team sheet, but people talking about him. And I think with Jesse, I think if he'd have probably got the right option or the right people around him to make better decisions...
That could have been him.
That could have been him. 100%, why wouldn't it have been?
Yeah, sure.
But there would have been other clubs. I can't imagine if... I'm speculating about wages, but I can't imagine why Everton wouldn't want to take him.
Yeah.
Do you know if he'd have gone on trial?
Yeah. Mm.
And sure, they haven't got a pot to...
But even if they give him a six-month deal, deal between Christmas and the end of the season, they go, right, Jesse, we're only going to be able to pay you 10 grand a week, but this is your platform here now. You have got a platform on a Saturday afternoon to go out and show everybody how good you are. Uh-huh. And in return, if we really like you and you do really well for us, we will look after you as well. We'll give you a 2-year deal after this or something like that.
Because I believe he wanted to play. But then as soon as the word got out that maybe he was after this or after that, then clubs are then judging your character or what you potentially are off something that isn't true.
Could be hearsay.
Yeah, exactly.
It?
Yeah.
Does every club do their due diligence on player, Jags?
Well, different clubs do different ones. So, say, I know we're using Jesse, but say Jesse's got a relationship with someone who is at a board of another club. They must know him.
Yeah.
So say, well, John Murta's left Man U.
Yeah.
Say he ended up at another club. He'll know what he's like as an individual. If he likes him, he'd get him in.
Yeah.
But if you're that time and unfortunate that your connections aren't in anywhere that you really want them
to be. Applicable,
you're a bit snookered, aren't you? Yeah, it's not whether you're not good enough or you've all of a sudden become a bad person. It's just no one's fighting your corner.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're saying who you know, not what you know, or whatever. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, like, and that seems to have happened to him. He's not a bad player. I bet he's... I've been on a little few camps of him. He seems like a sound enough lad.
Yeah.
But if you're portrayed in a certain light, you can't change that until, like you said, potentially, if you go on trial, You show that you're outrunning the other midfielders. Yeah, yeah. You show that you've got way better technical ability and you are actually useful for this squad of players, and you're prepared to sort of buy into the philosophy and whatever's going on with whatever club it is, surely he'd have found somewhere more local.
Yeah,
maybe,
so.
Maybe, but then again, maybe he does want a journey abroad.
Yeah.
And it's something new.
Maybe this is exactly what he wants.
It's true.
And experience something new.
Fair play, I was never one, but as I got older, I thought, well, I tell you what, I wouldn't actually say no, especially as I got a little bit, to go and play abroad, to go and play in Greece, to go and play in Spain or Portugal or something. But as a young, I was like, no chance, I don't want to. You know, like, but as you get older, sometimes you think to yourself, if I don't do it now, when will I?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. You know, when you finished, left Stoke, as an outfield player, how do you motivate yourself to kind of keep yourself in good nick? So like you said, as it gets towards Christmas, how much are you training? What's the intensity of your training? And where are you training?
So it's different. So that's why, obviously, I announced my retirement, because I was fed up of going runs, fed up of going jumping, and I'd not kicked a ball properly since May, because I'd not kicked a ball in a game. I'd played a little bit of two-touch with my lad or whatever, but I hadn't. And it was like, and you just month by month comes and like, it's okay, well, that's a chance of windows shut, we'll have a month and then let's do this. And it was like, what's the point? There's nothing I can see now that's going to excite me to actually want to go and play for any, all of the above reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd still like, if this list was ticked, which it won't be ticked, it's almost like an impossible list now, I'll go and play. So they got to a point, so let's just announce it. And it was annoying me that I couldn't really announce it, because it was like still like within 3 or 4 weeks of the in September it was. I was like, well, just might as well do it now. And it's like, hey, can you speak to your agent? No, but they've got a couple of injuries, or these might want this. So then, at least now I can sit back and say, I gave anyone and everyone the opportunity to call me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I'd retired in May the 20th, and then my agents had 12 different phone calls about centre-halves that they've been desperate for, and I'd be kicking myself saying, well, maybe if I'd have just held it off. So now I've done it. Yeah, would I love to still be? Of course I would. Can I? Who knows? We'll never know, because that's me done.
I mean, to be fair, Phil, like, making that decision or to a point at 40, though, you must be
thrilled. You can look
thrilled.
Yourself in the mirror and
you
go,
must
yeah,
be thrilled.
On,
I mean, you've had, how many get 805 games, 40 England caps. You've had a
England career. Goal as well, you know.
Yeah. Three England goals.
Three England goals?
Yeah.
Three England goals.
Come on. I ain't done my research here, right?
But I think I was actually okay with it. When I left Everton, I was okay with if that was it done. Then I signed the year, then the extra year at Sheffield. And it was a case of like, okay, maybe it's my time. But then, because I'd not played in the Championship for a while, I thought I would have stayed at Sheffield and they'd have kept me around. You know, like, but it, whatever happens, the best thing. And then when I started playing again, week in, week out, like my drive was basically like, I'll show you. Played against Sheffield a couple of times, played against Sheffield for Stoke, scored, beat them. Like, still love Sheffield, but that part of me was desperate.
Yeah, damn
desperate
right.
to.
Yeah, personal
and
pride.
It was my best games because I played in, obviously, I played in bigger, more obvious games in my career, and this was for nothing, but I say personal pride took in, and I was not letting them score. And, you know, like, it was just, and it was strange because I'd not had them feelings for years and years, really. Yeah. So it was nice, but. Yeah, I'd have expected to have finished earlier. But when I got to 38 and it was like, I'm going to be, because my birthday's in August, so obviously I turn an extra year quite quickly.
Yeah.
So I was 38 and I was obviously, contract was up. And then they were and then I got 6 months deal. So I love these 6 months deal. So it gets a bit painful. So like 6 months of Christmas. But then I thought to myself, I'll tell you what, I'll be 39, sack it. I can at least say I've played at 39. And then manager got sacked and then Alec came in. He didn't want to play me. Because he obviously wanted to go a different way than he did. Then I got to the end of the season. I thought, like, I'm now like 40. And then I was like, well, why not score at 40 or why not have something? And everything worked out perfectly. I wouldn't, if I'd not had the journey I had towards a lot of years, if I'd have still been a squad player or anything, I don't think I'd have continued. Because all I wanted to do was play games.
On Saturday afternoon.
That, it wasn't. As much as you enjoyed the five sides or whatever, it wasn't even. I remember coming back for pre-season, we did like a 1K challenge where you just run up and down the pitch 10 times. I'm on about eight lengths, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing?
What have I signed up to, yeah.
But thankfully, the people around me, like the lads, kept me young in the change. I'm a bit of a kid anyway. Everyone was brilliant. Even the staff were good about it. Whereas if I think, if I didn't get on and there was no connection, even the physios were brilliant. They weren't. they weren't getting told off, or there was no friction, you know, between me not training and doing whatever. He sort of had your back and he was fine about it. So I think because I had that towards the latter end, I carried on. If I'd not been playing, and you'd have been forced to do the rubbish sessions when there's like four people and you're doing 2v2s.
Painful, yeah.
I would have quit. I'd have just walked in. And because it's not because I don't love football. I'd done that before. I'd been there.
It's that adrenaline on the 3 p.m. Yeah, mate. Yeah. Let me take you back to Phil Jagielka, sort of as a youngster then, in his prime, basically. I'm talking blonde-haired, spiky Phil Jagielka, Neil Warnock shouting at you, making your England debut, all that kind of stuff. What was Phil Jagielka.
I think he's winding me up here. He's made his own version up.
What was Jags as a centre back? Tell me about you as a centre back.
I didn't want to be a centre back.
Yeah,
I was a centre midfielder.
Yeah.
So I was at Everton. I was quite small because I was August birthday. Mm. So I played like I was up front and I sort of attacking midfielder. So when I came to Chef U as a scholarship, I was a midfielder, goal scoring midfielder, and I had a bit of a growth spurt. And then we played the Youth Cup, and we had, because our centre halves were like, who played week in, week out from the under-18s, were sort of first year pros. So they couldn't play in the Youth Cup. So we were now struggling. We had no centre half. So I had to play centre half. And I played pretty well. And then I dipped in and out of it, but then I was still playing centre mid. So when I was playing, my first 50 games would have been centre mid or right back.
As a pro?
As a pro for Chef U. My debut would come on at right back, swinging away for like 10 minutes, just ran around like an idiot. But it was more in midfield. And then, obviously, the game changed slightly where you were allowed not to be 6'4", and if you were more mobile and do whatever. So I ended up playing like Sean Murphy, who just basically he went up for every header. I just covered round, then Robert Page. So I developed differently. And obviously, my season before we went into the Premier League, I was playing centre mid. But then obviously, when I went up into the Premier League, I played pretty much the whole season, most of it at centre back.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I was quick enough to deal with everything that was going on. So my development was pretty crazy. Like, and I didn't like defending. I think that's... So, five-a-sides. No interest in doing them at the back. Because all I'm doing now is someone's getting a ball out the feet and they're leathering it, and I've got to try and get in the way. And I'm getting, like, stingers in your leg. I'm like, you can just see my face now. Or someone's, like, just, like, kicking you afterwards. And then, like, one of you send me in sometimes for five-a-sides. Says, Jaggy, I've had enough of your face. Go in. Like,
Waste of time.
I'm, like, 20 years old. So, like, I'm not, like, a 30-year-old pro. So, like, oh, you're just annoying me. And I'm like, fine, I don't want to defend. Like, do you know, like, I'm like a little sulker. Does that make sense? But then... with like Chris Morgan, Craig, because I always get mixed up between Craig and Chris Short. It's Craig Short. So obviously, Shorty had experience in the Premier League before, and he said, "Jags, you'll end up playing centre half." And I was like, "No chance, not interested." He's like, "You will." And then I'll always remember that conversation. And then obviously, as time developed, I played mainly at the back. Then we got signed to Everton, and I was a bit of everything. I sort of wasn't over tall for a right back, so played there a couple of times. Played centre mid a couple of times and tried to man mark like Gaz Barry and Ronaldo and that, like running after him. Just basically, just young lad, just go run after him. Then eventually, African Nations came and Joseph Yobo had to go to play for Nigeria. And I got a run in the team at centre half next to Jolyon.
Alongside Jolyon, that was it.
Yeah, and then that sort of solidified my place. Then it was a weird one that season. So me and Bainsey both signed at the same time. So if Bainsey played left back, Jolyon played left centre half and Yobo played. So I was on the bench. Yeah. Whereas if I played centre half, Jolyon went to left back and it was me and Yobo at centre half. So me and Bainsey didn't play, like, they never played never for the played first it. Season.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
We'd both been bought. And at the time, Everton had not much money. But then obviously, this, as it develops, obviously me and Bainsey played together for many years. But that's how my journey went of, basically, never wanting to entertain being a defender, and then thankfully being one, which allowed me. Because if I'd have been playing centre mid, there's no way I'd have played at 40.
No chance.
Unless I'd have been like the old Dunga role, or Jan Mulby. I'd have been like Jan Mulby role. Do you know what you just sit in the middle and go, no.
What about a little Luka Modric?
No, I haven't got that much ability. No. So no.
What about, can we go, you mentioned him earlier on, can we talk about Mr. Neil Warnock? So he's just come out of retirement. Again?
Oh, he has as well. Hasn't he?
Yeah,
Jesus.
So Neil's gone.
What's wrong with some people? What's wrong with some managers?
I saw him in Portugal and I laughed. I said, "You must be looking for a job soon to come out of retirement." It must be. Has he come out of retirement about five times now? He just smirked and laughed. He must have knew he was going to Aberdeen about 2 weeks later.
He must have known it, yeah. What's wrong with some? Why? If for somebody like that, you see Roy Hodgson still, well, obviously just left Crystal Palace, but they just don't know anything else to do. It's like is their life.
Institutionalised.
Yeah, institutionalised.
But he also will look at it. And he will back himself to make that club better for 4 months.
Well, to be fair, you look at a couple of years ago at Huddersfield when he turned it around. He went in there. They were relegated.
Rotherham as well?
He took Rotherham. He did Rotherham. And I think he got a bonus for staying up, as you do.
Yeah.
But then I think he looked at the squad and I think even what was offered, I don't think they were going to be allowed to buy any players. And he left, which normally if you keep them up...
Yeah, for sure.
You then But he realised what his traits were. That was the first time I'd probably doubted that he'd be able to do it at Huddersfield.
Really?
Other times I'm thinking there's every chance this will work here. But I just thought they were so off it.
Yeah.
To be fair, I scored... If his first game, he'd been made manager at Huddersfield, but he wasn't in the country or something. I scored... against Huddersfield, we beat him, and then he took over like as of the Monday. And I was thinking, if he was in the crowd, he's probably going to be absolutely chewing at me here. But no, but the jobs he'd done, and say again, he's gone to Aberdeen, and I seen the first game they were unlucky. I think it was against Rangers. Yeah. But now, like, you'll never doubt the fact that he's a man manager. As I said before, he'll know that players there that maybe haven't been given a chance, or he'll have done enough research to know which buttons to press for what arm round. Or a bollocking. Yeah. He'll know which one will work. And there's not many managers left that do those. They basically have their way, either come with me or we'll leave you behind.
Yeah, that's a dying trend, isn't it?
Well, we don't have managers, we have coaches now, don't we?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
I always find it funny when someone's a first team coach, or you're the gaffer, the manager. Yeah. Like, if your coach is well played, but you're the manager.
Is the difference basically that the first team coach doesn't sign players?
Sometimes, can step away from it a little bit, or isn't very good at talking to humans.
Yeah, people right. skills. Okay.
People skills. And it's fair play. There's been some amazing people that aren't very good in that, but know the football and can get people playing. But I think for me, you need a person that you can, if you're going to play for them for a long time, you need to.
That's why the top managers are the top managers. The Alex Ferguson, the Klopp, the Pep Guardiola. That's the reason why they're the top.
Well, that's why Mourinho did so well for so long at Chelsea, because he had his little gang. And they were British based, and they knew Chelsea did well. I'm not saying he's not done as well in other ones, because he's probably alienated a few too many and not had a stronger core group.
That's right.
As he had at Chelsea.
Was Neil Warnock your favourite manager you played for?
It's difficult. So the best thing about sort of the managers that I played for, obviously, he's got to be. He gave me a chance in football.
Yeah.
He looked after me. We got on well. Obviously, I had quite a few bollockings and stuff along the way. There's a few that have been televised. But
you don't
fine.
Mind then, though, do you? You don't mind
It's
them,
made
you?
Me the character.
Yeah.
I think to myself now, if my son was getting managed by the same person, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
And if my son acted inappropriately or answered back or was childish or whatever, I'd be more annoyed at my son, because I'm thinking of development as a huge, as a whatever. You've sometimes, you could go and knock on a Monday morning and say, I think you're out of order.
Yeah.
Do you know, but I think there's a respect element, and you're now a grown man and you've got to take responsibility for your actions. And if you've messed up, you can't expect everyone to, every time, put your hand around it and say, unlucky.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to get it. You're going to get
roasted.
Yeah, exactly. And it might not be nice, but the fact of the matter is, if it's not a personal vendetta against you, it's absolutely fine. If it's a personal vendetta, obviously it's something different. So I'd say Warnock's got to be up there.
Yeah.
David Moyes moved me forward from potentially a Premier League player to playing internationally. Yeah. So he was good for me. He put me in a good Everton team. And same again, the morals of that team was basically...
Was it him that made you captain?
He would have done, but he... So his plan was to that season, but then he left to go to Man U. But we'd had conversations like in the Jan that obviously, like, Phil, and then you'll be taking over. Then obviously it was Roberto. Roberto was good for me, but he just didn't quite grasp the... How can I put it? He wanted to play a lot of attractive football, which was fantastic, but plan B needed to happen more when you were at an Everton team.
Yeah.
Because the fans wanted that.
Of course they did, yeah.
You know, something similar happened to Patrick Vieira, who went to Crystal Palace. When he played some attractive football, it was lovely, but the Palace fans also want, you know, get it. They want shots on goals. They want, you know, they want the roller coaster ride of a game rather than total football. Does that make sense?
I got in trouble. Remember a couple of years ago when I said about Everton fans, and I said the going to Goodison for me was always, it was such a hostile place to go to. And the Everton fans, if we started quick as an away team and we got on top and we scored an early goal, the Everton fans would almost kill the Everton players. They would get in their head because they expected a certain level of something.
Yeah.
And flip it on its reverse, when I remember the Frank Lampard era, where they were getting relegated and then they went on some mad run towards the MC, and the fans were so behind that football club, it was outrageous. And the support, and they just boosted them to win.
I think you have to get both ends of it. I think The only clubs that cheer, win, lose or draw for me are the newly promoted teams, the ones that are happy to be
just
here.
Happy to be a part of it.
Or thank God we're not in a relegation dogfight. When you're a proper
established
Premier League team and one with a history, especially as Everton does, they are going to be passionate. And passion doesn't run one way. Mm. It runs both ways. Yeah, Excite me and I'll tell you about it. Annoy me.
Yeah.
I'll also tell you about it. And that's the difference. And like you're perfectly correct. If you're 2-0 down after 15 minutes and no one can pass a ball to each other, they're not going to start singing. They're going to lead. You know, it's the way it is. And that's the way it goes. And it is a difficult atmosphere to play in if you're not doing very well. Fans will only be as good as what you give them.
Yeah.
If you give them something to shout about, fans very rarely come to the ground and are really negative before you kick off. But they can get to being quite negative quite
quickly
because of what's happened last week, or they're not happy with the team, or they're not in a position they want to be. They want to go there. I believe most of them want to go there
and have a nice time
to be able to have a couple of drinks, and sing the songs they want to sing, and then hopefully have a good night afterwards.
Yeah.
But the amount of night outs that are ruined by us rubbish footballers that don't give them the result.
Yeah.
But that's the way the thing is. And let's be honest, they spend a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's not cheap to be a football fan anymore.
No chance.
So I get it, but. Yeah, it is really tough. And because Goodison is quite close in on you. Yeah, I've been told to sort it out many times. I've been told to sort it out when I was on the bench. And I'm looking around thinking,
how? Give me a chance.
I'm trying to get on. But you understand it, but it is difficult. It is really difficult. Chef, you same. When you're at like a club that's like that, the fans are amazing. It's a difficult place for an away team to play when the home team's doing well. But it almost becomes, I wouldn't say slightly easier, but it almost becomes part of your game plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To quiet him down.
Right. So 805 professional games. How many of those games did you play in goal?
I didn't start any in goal. Four.
Yeah. That's got to be the most.
It must
you
be.
Sure
I would like to add my minutes together, and I've definitely got to be the most.
You've got that individual games. Talk us through the games.
So... Well, I'll talk to you how I first became known to be the sub goalkeeper.
The cat.
Yeah, the cat. So, before training. So
this is with Neil Warnock.
Yeah. So, you come out of the steps, you go out, and they'd be like, obviously, the net would be put up, people would be cones, then you'd wait for everyone to get out. Couple of laps, stretch, couple of laps. That's what the warm up was. So, before that, keen, going out early, probably got like a nice new pair of boots on or whatever, the lads. So, then a few of the lads would kick a ball out of one of the nets, put it on the edge of the box, and you start having like little sort of free kicky things in. So I'd be like, oh, sack it, I'll go in goal. I can't be, I can't bother kicking it. So
don't want to open the groin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no one's scoring. Like I'm literally like saving. So you're only supposed to be like curling them at the moment because you're not warm. So you're not going laces. You're not going full whip.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like little drifters into the far corners. But then because obviously I had a couple of my mates that were coming through at the same time. Then now the banter's flowing. Come on, I'm even guessing where they're going. So like, you know, like opening that, catching it instead of like diving. Then Neil Warnock was known. Bear in mind, we only have five subs at this point. His philosophy was, and he'd said he'd done it before, where he wouldn't put a keeper on the bench.
Yeah, I remember this.
And bear in mind, he'd been at some other clubs that probably financially probably didn't have a great number two and whatnot. So we're talking lower down. So I wouldn't say the goalkeeper he had would be useless, but it wouldn't be even great anyway.
It wouldn't be worth taking a slot up on the bench, basically.
So in his head, he was like, well, I can make three subs. I'm going to probably make three subs. Maybe one might be defensive, the one might be like for like, but realistically, man, subs, and he did collect strikers. If he played well against him, he was going to try and sign in the next week. That's the way he was. We must have signed so many people that had like scored a hat-trick and he'd be like, we're interested in him. We've already got like six, but that's the way he was. So he'd prefer to have them on the bench. So he said like, no, they're not going to have a goalkeeper on the bench and we'll figure it out as and when, if anything went on. And if you look at it statistically, how often does a keeper get?
That's not happening.
It doesn't.
So...
I remember Paul Pescasolido was like also doing something similar. So he was like, I'll have a go, Jags. And obviously Pesh was like 5'6".
Yeah.
But still, again, keen as mustard, like messing around. He was saving some goals. So like we had the conversation of like, who's going to actually have to go in goal? Like now we're not putting a goalkeeper on the bench. And Pesh was putting his hand up and like, it was hilarious. And then like when you look around and you see like the films and someone looks around, someone puts their hands up and the person's still looking around. They're like, as if the person's not got, as if he's not got his hand up. So then we had the conversation and it was like, Jaggers, you're going to go in goal, like, if anything happens. So I was like, young lad confidence or anything. Oh, yeah, I'll be fine. I'll probably be better than Paddy anyway. Do you know, like, Paddy's like, you cheeky bastard. Do you know, like, as it was. And he always got on well with keepers. Being, a, like, I must say keepers are pretty tapped. So I must be the same. But even international duty, I hung around with you guys.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
I always quite like the...
Yeah.
The bond
in
and
Brazil,
the,
he was like an honorary goalie.
But everyone, like Tim Howard, like you say, yourself, Hearty, Fraser, you know, like, always got on with him well. Don't know if we positionally obviously have to figure things out, and I think that's what made a good defensive unit. So I got on well with Paddy all the time, and was checking out, see what size gloves he was, and he was pretty similar size to what I was. So I was like, oh, they'll do. But then nothing happened. Then we played Crystal Palace away, and then Paddy did his knee after 40 minutes. So you've seen him stretch down, and I'm daydreaming the life out of it, not thinking nothing. And then it dawned on me. I've looked at the bench, and I can see like Pesh is thinking about
it's my time.
Yeah.
It's my time to shine.
And then obviously a bit of huddle. He's like, Jags, you're going to have to go and go, Paddy's like,
After 40 minutes.
Yeah, 40 minutes. So 5 minutes before half time. So I'm like, wow. So put his gloves on, put Paddy's top on. So in 5 minutes, not much happened between 5 minutes, other than my heart must have been going about 1,000 beats per minute. So we've got in, and it's obviously, I was on the far side. So you come out the tunnel.
I was on the far side.
So away from there, like their main end. Where
you've
the,
got your fans
and a little
there.
Bit of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think we're potentially winning 1-0, or it's 0-0. And then I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I'll go in. It's a really tight tunnel. So we're talking, we're having a team talk. And I'm just... amazed that I've now got wearing a grey goalkeeper top or whatever, you know, instead of like, so the goalkeeper and he leaning goes, right, Jags, we'll go outside and do a bit of handling, like to give me some sort of like
a base.
Yes.
A base, yeah.
So he said handling, obviously, Fozzy, you know what I'm talking about. He stands about 10 yards away from you, half volleys, it volleys it into you. So I've gone in front of their cop, basically, outside now, when no one else on the pitch, obviously it's half time. Yeah, yeah. So first five or six, he's zapping in and they're going, ooh, and every time, I kid you not, everyone, perfect.
Oh,
I've gone like, because I've had the conversations with keepers, weird again. It's like, when I started, because I'd done a tiny bit of goalkeeping, like work, a bit of handling, just literally like 5 or 10 minutes, you know, like just to get comfortable, like standing where you were and stuff. And I, Fozzy, understand. So when the ball was coming towards me, because it's naturally a bit of a scary thing, because it comes quick, you sort of push your hands towards and you end up slapping the ball. And I'm still catching it, but I'm doing the wrong thing. So in the end, because I was so used to it, my hands are here, I'm now taking it, and I'm now taking it closer to my face, but taking the actual tension of the ball off. So I'm doing it, and the ball's not making no sound. It's coming perfectly into my gloves, and I'm catching all these balls, and I'm thinking that I'm the dog's bollocks here. Like I'm, and do you know what I mean? So then we've gone. We win the game 2-1. They have a penalty, though. And Andrew Johnson plays up front for the AJ. So I knew him, played against him loads up front. Yeah. I'd hate to look at the video. My dive, because he'd started talking about, you know, being on the line.
Yeah.
So normally, if you're messing around, you'd sort of come forward and dive. But now I was so nervous about staying at the line. Yeah. I've died. I don't even know. I think I've ended up facing here. Do you know, like normally you do that? Like, he slotted it in that corner. I've gone the wrong way. But I was so concerned about staying on the line, I forgot how to dive. And we won 2-1, but for me, I'll never forget that day, because I wasn't concerned about someone taking a shot from 20 yards and whipping in the top corner. Every time that we had the ball in their half and they were coming towards us, I was like, oh my gosh. And I must have checked out the post.
Yeah. Can he score from there? Yeah. Can he score from there?
Because I'm thinking I'm going to be stood where the goals are. I think I'm going to be stood about a yard away from one post. You know, I'm being like sort of a gif, or like, you know, they're going to match the day and saying, what is this clown doing?
Yeah.
So, and I swear, and then we won 2-1, buzzing, everyone's dead happy. I don't think I had too much to do.
So
I was drained, and it was the tightest I've ever been after a game.
Mentally.
And I'd always hammered the goal. I was like, Paddy, you are joke tired. You've done nothing, mate. You've not even come for a cross. And he's like, Jags, I tell you. And then I held my hands up and said, I have literally, like, mentally.
It's worrying, mate. It's worrying.
Yeah, it was. But we got through it, so it's fine. So then it was like, so then we obviously got some kick goalkeeper, whatever. But then the two other main sides, I went in goal once against Plymouth away after 30 minutes. Paddy got injured. So 60 minutes, I'm in goal. We lost like 3 or 4-0, Plymouth away. I think I pulled my left thigh or tweaked it. I took that many goal kicks. Because you're not used to it. I'm trying to kick the ball as hard as I can now. Yeah. So that was horrendous. But the two main ones, obviously, I'll leave the last one, which you'll know about. But Millwall away, we've got our Christmas do booked. We're going to Dublin afterwards. Oh. Yep, from London. I think we're winning 1-0. Half time comes, absolute scuffle in like they pull the whatchamacallit, the tunnel out.
Yeah.
I'm just jogging in. Bear in mind, I've got pretty long hair, Alice band, a few highlights in.
Disgusting.
Probably looking absolutely a million yen. Yeah. But so we've come in, and it's been a kerfuffle. And also, I've never been one to get involved in it and all sorts. We've come in, like, you can just see loads of stuff, security guards. We've come in. Warnock's like, and Paddy's like, I've just been fighting with Muscat. And he's like, brilliant, Paddy, brilliant. Like, lads, well done. Like, everyone buzzed. You're like... Because we're at the Den, mate. It's a difficult place to play. And yeah,
you got to fight with Muscat.
Yeah.
Buzzing. Warnock buzzing with it, though.
And then,
yeah,
I knock on the door. Come here, Warnock. So, referees pulled Warnock, and I think it was may have been Dennis Wise was there. Yeah. I've seen Dennis Wise since. He was laughing. He remembers it. They said, we're trying to wind him up because they knew we had no goalkeeper on the bench. And we've just spoke to their security officer, and Muscat and Paddy Kenny are going to get sent off. Because they've been fighting. Oh. So there's no video evidence on the say-so of a Millwall, basically, head steward. Yeah?
That can't be a thing.
They lost a right-back.
We lost our goalie.
We lost our only goalkeeper. Yeah? So then Warlock's come back in, told Paddy to fuck off, get out of my face. I don't want to see. So he's gone from hero to absolute zero.
Good lad, literally.
And then... So I've now gone in. I've gone on. I remember I had red boots on, black socks. We played in orange, like black, then green. And I had to go out now, like in front of the Millwall, and like longest gloves on.
And then
we ended up winning like 2-1. I've saved like a shot from Eiffel, who come and signed for us like a year afterwards. I've saved it. We've won the game. So at the moment, I've played in goal twice, three times. We've had two wins and like one defeat. So I'm doing okay. And then we obviously had a Christmas do in Dublin.
Belting.
It was brilliant. But when we come back in, and obviously Paddy's now fully changed and whatever, he's just telling Paddy, don't need him anymore. Like, obviously when he was back fit again, he was our number one and we loved him again. But for that period, you know, like that's the way obviously Warnock was, we might just put Jaggy in goal every week. You know, like buzzing off it. And then the main one, obviously then, you get out of the championship and you go and play in the best division in the world.
Yeah.
And you'd like to think, any normal manager would then err on the side of safety.
Let's do this properly. Let's do it professionally.
The budgets are better.
Yeah.
I'd like to hazard a guess that every other team has two goalkeepers in the match day squad.
Can I just say as well, imagine you're a goalie and you signed for Sheffield United.
I'm now, because I've done it a couple of times, I'm doing a bit of like goalie wars where you're like 20 yards apart, I'm joining in, me and the goalkeeper coach versus the two goalkeepers.
Genuinely joining in training?
So after like the afternoon session, I'd go and do a bit, you know, because now I'm actually enjoying being
there.
Me and a goalkeeper coach beat the two goalkeepers. The worst thing was, I'd save better than he would. He'd score better than I was. I was supposed to be the outfield player. But it was hard again because I've now got to have the relationship. I'm not taking his position, but because I've done actually okay, I'm not mugging you off, but as a second choice goalkeeper,
I am.
I'm not trying to do...
Who was it? Was it Paul Gerrard?
Gerrard at one point. We had Phil Barnes as well at one point. Yeah, he was at Blackpool and stuff. But... it was almost like accepted. It's like, well, he doesn't put keepers on. So now, but we probably didn't sign two or three goalkeepers for that reason.
Because they had you. You saved them a lot of money, though.
Not because of me, because if you're going to come in and say, well, when do I get a game? Well, maybe a cup game, or maybe if he gets suspended.
That's it.
What about if he gets in? No, you won't be in the match day squad. You'll be having a big coat and a hat on. Do you know, like, in the Premier League, this is.
Wow.
But I think he did put a keep on the odd time, but...
No, Arsenal. I remember back in the day, he never had one on the bench.
So it was
ridiculous.
Yeah, the big one was Arsenal, which was still, how many minutes?
Well, same again, was it 55, 60
minutes?
So if we had all my minutes here, I've done 45, 60, 50, and now another 30 minutes. 30 minutes where he was in goal. But Paddy had done his groin, I'd been taking goal kicks for him. So I got sort of like a 10 or 15 minute warning that basically he could be gone here. Yeah, and then he's took it. He's gone down.
The goal kick. It's horrible. He goes straight away as well.
And I'm like, I know it's coming now, so I'm fully aware. And I'm thinking, here we go again. But
this one must be felt a little bit different. But we were one nil up. You're playing Arsenal.
I need
you're
a
1-0
on this as well. Yeah, I need a 10. Yeah.
So here's a little clip. We won't be able to put it on the screen, but this is Paddy and
Phil. I'm comfortable now.
Just swapping shirts.
Right, break down the save for us then, Ben.
Yeah. So. But to be fair, I didn't have that much. I'll go on to another story. So it comes into Van Persie, it's into the ground. It's what I should have done. I flicked over. I should have probably scorpioned and kicked my legs.
Mate, if you would have done.
Yeah, but I was an outfield. But it's like, that's not my sport, is it? This is not my sport.
Can I tell you, though, you've stayed up so long there. That's really, really good. A lot of goalies just go to ground there, you know, it's a goal.
Well, I'm more proud of, if you watch the extended version, like, because I said I'm quite close to the keepers, do you know a cross comes in? And
at the end?
No, when a cross comes in a game.
Yeah.
And if I get no communication or I get... a late shout of away. So I used to have a laugh joke with Paddy. Mine, yours, keepers away. Yeah, so he's basically told me four different things here. So now, going, not going, leaving it, ducking it. And then sometimes he'd say all them, he'd go through, miss the post by an inch. We'd look at each other and laugh. Or we'd look at each other and rage. So I said to him, how hard can it be? The ball comes in for a cross or a corner. How hard can it be to come and catch it? So in that game, there's about three crosses I've come for. I've punched two and caught one. So like I said to myself, I'm going to become a bit more comfortable because I'd done a tiny bit of training.
Yeah.
I'd played before, and we were expected to lose the game regardless whether we lost a keeper. And so I've come for a couple of crosses and all sorts, but it's class. But the boys were brilliant. It was a time when Arsenal were, I won't say playing tiki-taka, but they were very possession-based.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If we'd have played another team that was a bit more...
Ball in the box.
Let's say if we'd have played like a Bolton or something at the time.
Or Stoke.
I'd have been snookered. I'd have had maybe the highlights reel may have been 25 saves, but I didn't really have much. A couple of crosses, a couple of communication, a couple of kicks and stuff. But it's brilliant when, like, you don't realise how good of a moment that is until now you've finished. And you know it won't happen
and
again.
And you won 1-0.
They
won 1-0.
Yeah, no, someone will go in goal because they've made enough subs and someone gets injured. It's probably a little bit hard now. There's five subs. But even now, if the keeper gets injured and it's concussion, you've made five subs, you can still put a keeper.
So
the chances of
it's not
going to
happen again, is it?
It's not going to happen for how many minutes? Half an hour. It's not going to happen.
It's not.
For me, it's like, it's quite iconic. It's there's
a few, when you think back to outfield players going in goal, straight away your mind jumps to,
John O'Shea.
Harry Kane. Rio.
Well, Kyle Walker went in for a tiny bit. These are all normally 5 minute.
Yeah.
They are cameos.
But if you stack up my minutes, I've played about a game and a half.
Yeah, you have. I think you've got the record. I'm sure of it.
You must
I'm
have.
Almost certain
did you
got
get a bonus of laying in goal?
I think I've got a clean sheet bonus. Yeah. I'd have been on that anyway, wouldn't I?
Right, let me take you back to England debut then. Obviously a very proud moment for you. 40 England caps, 3 goals. Fabio Capello gave you your debut. What do you remember from that game?
Well, it was the end of the season and we had 2 games. We had a game against USA I was on the bench for. I'd been in a couple of squads, but it was hard to get a game, you know, the people ahead of you and stuff.
Who was ahead of you at that moment?
JT and Rio was basically, it's difficult.
Yeah.
So after the USA game, shall I say the senior players were given the option whether they wanted to come to Trinidad and Tobago or not, or they could obviously go on big, big, long seasons. So we had a bit of a bigger squad, maybe had like a 28-man squad, for the first one. So then quite a few went home and there was a debate who was going to be captain. So I think a couple of lads came, I think, Rio came, I think David Beckham came and stuff to that one. But we're playing Trinidad and Tobago away. It was an in-and-out job. It was like 2 or 3 days. The pitch wasn't amazing or whatever, but it was a case of, like, I've got a good chance now. If I'm ever going to get a chance, I'm actually playing. So number 15 shirt, I've got it framed at home and stuff. So then we've played, I've come on. We've done well. It's roasting hot. Just like the buzzing. It's like, this is worthwhile because as a footballer, you're... off-season is so precious to you because it's the only time you can get 4 continual weeks or a couple of weeks, especially if you've got
recover.
Kids and whatever, and actually down tools and enjoy it. And this international, it wasn't eating into it, but if you'd not got a game, you've done like 2.5 weeks of that. You might only get an extra 5 or 6 days off from your club. As much as you're desperate to play for your country, it ruins you so much that you can't book holidays.
But not only that, you don't get, like I say, a little bit of a refresh. You don't get to go into next season.
So before you know
it,
it's a quick turn now. So you're desperate. So it happened, but it came at a time where everyone was complaining that every time it was a friendly, there was like 8 subs at half time and then there was 5 more during the game and it was just basically, it slowed the game down. It was rubbish. So I think FIFA tried to stop. It was only a maximum of 6. But we'd made an agreement with Trinidad and Tobago that we could make 8 subs. So I think, thankfully I wasn't number 7 or number 8, but I got on the pitch, brilliant, brilliant. And just as we were about to fly, we found out that the game might be cancelled as a game because we'd made more than like 5 or 6 substitutions.
You mean it's going to get sort of like rubbed out from the record?
Yeah, basically someone had their raise or the tip back, someone said never existed, or turn it into like an exhibition game or whatever.
Oh, you're going to be heartbroken.
So that would have been me thinking, brilliant, man, never going to. So I get on the plane, it's like, got me signed shirt, It's a buzz. You've been away. Now you're going to go and holding. And thankfully, I think by the time we got the plane home, like 15 hours late, whatever, they'd figured out that it was obviously the paperwork or whatever that both nations had agreed.
So it's fine
prior to the game. So yeah, boom,
got your cap.
And now an England international. But then you have to wait. Obviously, that I knew the pecking order, so I must have hung around like a bad smell for about 5 or 6 years. You know, like 4 years of going to camps, training, trying to get some sort of game time, but. As
40
expected.
Caps, though, that's is impressive. Yeah.
If you've got 40 caps for England, at some point, you must have been the starting centre-back for England.
So obviously, that generation left, and it was sort of me and Gaz Cahill.
Yeah.
So I probably would have had 25 of my starts, I wouldn't say continually, but over the course of probably 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I think I must have been around the England camp for probably 8 years.
Yeah.
I probably had 2 years, 3 years where I was...
Waiting.
Helpful.
Yeah.
And then 3 years, 4 years where I was, like, first pick... And then a year or so, and then obviously it finished there. But
you can see here, Phil, sorry to interrupt, but in 2012, you got 6 caps, 13, 2013, you got 8, then 2014, you got 10 caps. Yeah. So there was a three or four period.
The bulk of it there, yeah.
Well, 2014 was the Brazil World Cup, wasn't it? So obviously I went to that World Cup with you as well. It didn't turn out the way we wanted it to turn out, did we? I think on paper, it was a tough group to start with, a group that we thought we were going to get out of, Roy Hodgson was the manager, Costa Rica, Uruguay and Italy. And you started the first two games, didn't you? The first one against Italy.
Got 100% record.
Yeah.
Yeah, played 2, lost 2.
Cheers. Played 2 World Cups.
Cheers. What did we do in the third game?
Costa Rica, 0-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were out after the first two, so we lost the Italy game, we lost the Uruguay game.
So you were 100% loss, Ben, you were unbeaten in the World Cup.
I was unbeaten, clean sheet as well. Not conceded a goal in World Cup history.
Brilliant.
Not conceded a goal.
You and New Zealand?
Yeah.
New
Zealand. I knew I should not come in. Cheers, thanks.
Talk to me about that then, the 2014 World Cup.
I think same again. I think the level of frustration after it was so disappointing, just so gutted. I think there could have been a different ways we could have played. We sort of even changed like Wayne went to play on the left for a game where Welbs had normally played that. Do you know, like, I felt... It was just a nearly. We did all right in the Uruguay game, and they got a flick on Suarez on fire, scored in the nip. Just everything went against us.
To be fair,
the draw. Yeah. We're in Manaus in the jungle against. You know, like, just everything seemed to stack against us. But same again, when you come out of it at the end and you realise that I played for my country in a World
Cup. It's incredible, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. When you think about I got released as a 15-year-old from Everton. Do you know, like...
Yeah.
And there's a few games amongst... You know, it's just, like I say, before you said I've scored a goal. Like, it's... I don't see it, and you don't see it when you're involved in the football, of how special these moments are to a normal person, which we all are.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's amazing talking about it. I can laugh and joke about having a 100% record, but believe me, at the time, I don't want to fight you. Yeah. You know, that's the way it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was desperate to play in the last game.
Yeah.
I was desperate to get a win and try and finish it, because we lost to Italy, and then because we played earlier against Uruguay or whatever, No, because the last game was earlier. It was something like, if they'd have drew or whatever, there's a potential, if we'd have beat Costa Rica by a substantial amount of goals, we could still go through. But then I think Costa Rica ended up drawing or beating.
Costa Rica topped the group, didn't they?
Joel,
that group.
Do you remember? It was Joel Campbell from Arsenal. Yeah, he had a really good World Cup, didn't he?
Yeah.
But and you never imagined it. And we knew, to be fair, I remember being in the car and turning the radio, when the draw came, we couldn't have got a tougher draw, couldn't
we? Yeah,
no. Do you know, like, the players that play, like, that was probably the best Uruguay team just at the right time.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
They had Cavani and Suarez up front. Forlan. Yeah, and then the left winger was at Middlesbrough. And they were just like, come on, do us a favour.
Even Italy, it's Pirlo and his pomp. Yeah. Pirlo just...
Well, he did the wobble shot, didn't he?
He was the wobble shot past Hattie.
Who did Balotelli score?
Balotelli scored a header back. Why couldn't he have had one of his other days? Why couldn't it have been him on other days, he says?
I like it. Do you remember in that World Cup, I'm sure it's probably a common, like, run-of-the-mill thing now, but I remember we'd finish at full time, and there would be, as you were about to walk out of the changing room, there was like a whiteboard, because it was an era where the media, it was like they had their daggers out, didn't they? They had their daggers out so badly for the players.
And social media was just about coming.
Yeah, just about prevalent.
So it wasn't just newspapers, it's now online, and everything else was getting to the point of easy access. And I think the England, the FA and all sorts were trying to...
Get ahead of it.
Trying to find out what we were supposed to do. And again, it was a flip chart.
It was a flip chart,
Green writing, red writing. It was almost do's and don'ts of what to say. Well, bear in mind, we'd never been media trained. Yeah. Our media training was, as a kid, you were thrown in front of the mic and don't say anything stupid.
Yeah.
And then you'd figure it out along the way. Whereas obviously with England, because it wasn't your local paper you were speaking to, you were basically speaking to the whole nation.
Yeah.
And it was people you didn't know, faces. I'd had no idea who you are interviewing me. Whereas obviously if you're at your own club, I knew every Sheffield reporter or Merseyside reporter or whatever. But yeah, they got to a point where even if we won games, we'd still have... We still have a do's and don'ts.
Do talk about and then avoid. Do not talk about. Do not mention this. Do not mention. And it would be they would already know what the stories were going to be. So full time whistle had gone. We'd been in the changing room for 20 minutes, and the media team already knew what the narrative was going to be from the waiting world, didn't they?
And there was sort of like an acceptance of whoever the media wanted. So the media would say want three players. England had to feel like they had to give them at least two of the three.
Yeah.
Was it your club? If they wanted three players and you did not want any of those three players to do it, you'd say, well, you've got him or him. Deal with it.
Deal with it,
you know, but I get it. It was moving forward with the times of what social media and media were coming into the dressing room. But it was... Because bear in mind, if you'd have had a bad game, sometimes you could protect that player. Whereas it got to the point as if you're going to play, like win, lose or draw, you could be...
You've got to be ready for
it. You could be the guy that's got to then get... Explain why you've fell over the ball and they've got to score. Do you know, like, which was tough. It was sink or swim.
Do you remember, I remember being, I can't remember whether we were in Brazil or Miami or wherever it was, and Gaznev sat us all down and had a good big meeting with us about the media and about how it was, like I say, it was still in that era of where they've always got the daggers out for us. And he spoke to us all, because we had some young players on our team, a bit sort of naive, and he basically said, right, lads, listen, when you're getting interviewed, right, I don't want you to feel pressure. I don't want you to feel like you're on the back foot, like they're dictating to you and telling you how to answer this question almost. You can put it back on them, you know. Yeah. And I remember him saying it like that. And he said, you can put it back on them. If their opinion is this and they say, I think that, you can happily say to them, why do you think that? I know he's supposed to be interviewing you, but almost try and switch it and go, no, actually, I don't believe that. Why do you think that? And if he can try and explain it, and you're a footballer, you know what football is, try and make him justify what he's saying. And it was, I remember coming off it thinking, yeah, I like that.
Like I said, that's before there is media coaches. People, you know, can go into training grounds now as young lads. I'm sure part of their homework when they're 16, 17, 18 doing academy will have to be having a conversation.
Getting better at that.
So I think England... I think it was a positive they were looking at, but it was a case of, I wouldn't say it was like a scare type, but it was almost scary. But I think they were doing it for the right reasons. I think, same again, if you're getting interviewed, you can only answer the question they're giving you. But if you've got a couple of ideas of, you just like pre-armed is pre-warned or whatever it is. No, if you've got an idea of what's coming at you, at least have an answer that is probably a safe answer. Because the last thing you need to do is... after a game is tee your teammate up or stitch yourself a kibble.
Yeah, a couple more things we want to talk about, Phil. This has been world class, but you are so good at talking, like double handsome. I'm really good at talking. What a guy.
Double threat.
I want to talk about at Everton. There were rumours floating around at the time that Arsenal were trying to sign you. What did you know about this? So apparently there was a 13 million bid, maybe submitted by Arsenal. Everton rejected at the time. Were you aware of that bid? What were your thoughts of it?
Well, same again. We had David Moyes in charge, and he was someone that I felt I could speak to. Don't get me wrong, if I had a bad game and I was on the wrong side of him, I'd stay clear. Mm. But I'm saying he was very approachable. I think Phil Jones had just gone from Blackburn to Man U for like 24 million or whatever it was.
It's a lot of money.
Right? Yeah. A lot of money.
So... this is a time where probably my stock was probably at its highest at this point. I was doing well. I was probably getting a bit of England recognition and stuff like that. And at the point, Everton had no money. So every time a bid would come in, regardless of the price, whether it was a little bit undervalued or whatever, it had to be thought of because we'd not been able to buy a striker for years. We were loaning people or just trying to find what we could or playing two centre midfielders up top. Do you know, like, still competing?
Yeah.
But, you were trying to push on.
Yeah.
And I think Gaz Kale potentially was at Derby at the time, at Bolton, sorry, at the time, and they were looking at both of us. But I think that's the case. I think, you know, we were going on the train to London for a game, and the gaffer, obviously Moisey, pulled us up and said, look, like, we've had a bid from Arsenal. I think he said like 10, 11 million. He said, I'm not being funny. You're not going to be sold unless it's the same money as what Phil Jones has gone for.
Wow.
So, like, he let me know. And at the same time, I was really comfortable. I'm happy. I know I'll play my best in an environment that suits me and whatever. And I was now on my way. I probably have captained the side a couple of times. I was one of the first names on the team sheet. It was my team alongside with a couple of others, do you know, like,
yeah.
So I was like, okay, fair enough. Like, I'm not, there was no thought of me putting a transfer in or whatever, but I had to have the conversation because, you know, you do hear things, you read things, people asking you what's going on. It's like, well, I best go and ask him if, you know, and that cleared it up. The fact of the matter is they would have wanted double what Arsenal were prepared to pay. Tells you either Arsenal didn't want me enough.
Yeah, true that,
or
yeah.
Everton were never going to let me leave.
Yeah.
So a couple of seasons later, I think Joleon obviously would have gone to Man City. Different ball game again. It was 26, 24. Mm. It started with the two anyway.
Yeah.
So now we're talking money that will change your squad.
Mm.
10, 11 million pound won't change the squad. 25 or whatever, 30. Do you know that sort of money does, especially then. If you imagine, 11 million is probably about 40 million now, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 20, yeah.
25
yeah.
is probably worth 80. Do you know, like,
yeah.
the way, not money in the real world, but in football transfer goes.
Inflation. That's, yeah, that's what inflation that's what is. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
So that was probably about as close as I came. And I was quite content with it because I was happy and I was proud to be playing for Everton. Mm. But like I said, so in a nutshell, no, it was never close because the hardest thing would have been if it was 15 or 16 they'd put in. Because now been, you're edging
yeah,
towards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I presume they would have then said, you're going to have to make this happen.
Yeah.
And you then I've got
to kick up a fuss.
And then I'm thinking, I don't, but it's all if buts and maybes, and we'll never know the answers, will we?
It's amazing though. Like, there's certain players that just work at certain teams, yeah. isn't it? Like, do you know what I mean? You kind of, it's like certain players pigeonhole themselves at certain teams. I mentioned this on, I think it was the Football Villain the other day. People like you take a Jared Bowen for West Ham. Yeah. Jared Bowen could feasibly play at a little bit of a higher level. He's a very good player, playing for England now, doing really, really well. And that could happen, but why would he bother?
Well, the same
it
again,
works, doesn't it?
He wouldn't be guaranteed, if he goes to the next level
yeah.
of team, which you can debate that the next level, he won't be a guaranteed starter.
Yeah.
And if he is, he's got a guaranteed starter for a month.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if he's not done something for a month, he's now getting opportunities here, there and everywhere. And you and I both know match fitness plays and confidence play yeah, more sure. of a part than your ability.
Without doubt.
And if you've played for months and months, you're going to be good. If you've yeah. not played for a month, yeah. you're
off it for a bit.
Yeah.
If you get the wrong move at the wrong time as well, I mean, we'll maybe talk about it a little bit later, but you look at players like Calvin Phillips, Jack Rodwells from your Everton
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
There are players that fit certain clubs, aren't they? Definitely.
Well, they go missing like afterwards. And if you're missing for 6 months, 8 months.
Tough to get back that.
Unless you, again, your manager takes, so say for instance, the manager that bought you or the manager had you here,
yeah.
he's at the next club, so he knows you in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, that for me is the only way he does it. So he knows if you've had a torrid, it's fine because next week he'll be fine. Whereas if you've had a torrid and you've got a manager who doesn't really want you here or trust you anyway, he's not struggling. Playing you again for another month.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
now
yeah,
when man. You come in next time, please don't give a pass away.
You might be back out.
That's why certain players follow certain managers around.
We talked about Jesse Lingard earlier on, which is why we said when he went to West Ham, it just looked like it worked.
It just worked. It just
and
worked.
And he was on fire.
It was a no-brainer.
He was back in the England squad.
Everyone assumed he was going to stay there, sign a few years, boom. Yeah. Just keep ripping it up, Jesse.
Yeah. Want to talk to you, Phil, about the Merseyside derby. This must be your best goal, career goal.
Well, it has to be.
Mignolet should have saved it, shouldn't
he? Yeah, yeah, that's what Gaz said.
Could have had 10 Mignolets.
My dad's still got a dartboard with his face on. He's not happy with that one.
His hands were too low to start with, mate. Yeah. His hands were too low, and that's why he couldn't get up
exactly.
in time, right?
Because he played a few games in
goal himself.
Yeah,
I know, exactly, yeah.
Right. Yeah, but to be fair, the Merseyside derby, it's been horrendous to me, hasn't it, over the years. My ratio is not very good, but thankfully I've at least got one good moment. But yeah, it has to be. Where I'd scored at the time was a decent enough strike as well, so it's nice to be remembered for something at least.
What are they like, them derbies, the night before? Is that the worst part of that derby, is it? Is it the night before where you can hear all the chatter, it's all ready for the next day, and that's when your mind can get away with you a little bit?
I think you get a bit more comfortable with it as you've played in a couple, especially the first few. I remember, obviously, I played in the Sheffield Derby, and it's hostile. But I think when you got there, and you're literally hearing like the physio or the masseur that's probably potentially not even spoke one word all year, and he's literally effing and jet. You're like, you can just see he's
so
basically
much.
Saying, "You guys best liven up because do you know I've got mates." And do you know like you can? So you could just feel it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had a couple of scouts in the team as well, so you could. It just did, like I say, it was Derby week. That's what it was. That's what he called it. Derby week.
Really,
it was a build up for the week. Which was new to me because, like I say, Sheffield's a big city in all sorts, but it was like more like I'd say the day before, it's like, let's make sure we win. But it was difficult. And at the time, which was really good, we were at a similar level. We're both competing for like fourth, fifth, sixth.
Yeah, you know,
like
yeah, in that yeah, role. Everton were a good
team.
So yeah,
you had
time,
your Villas
yeah.
in there and
yeah.
all sorts and whatnot. Yeah. You didn't have, your Chelsea's hadn't bought the players and your Man City's probably weren't in the division. Do you know, like, so it's changed now, hasn't it? With if you've not watched football before in the last 5 years, you wouldn't understand that your Man City's and people weren't at all involved. It was the Arsenal, Man U, roughly Liverpool, but
this was years when Moisey and the team got into the Champions League.
Well, that was a year before coming to the Champions League. Then I think Kalina robbed him of something. Should have given him a penalty or something before he came. Then they didn't make the Champions League against Villarreal. But we had European football. We had European competitions there is anymore. But the Europa League, we must have had out of 10 seasons. We must have had 6 or 7. Yeah. Obviously, they've not had it since. But that was where Everton were. And same again, when we spoke about me moving, Arsenal weren't much ahead of where Everton were as well.
Yeah.
Whereas if you ask an Everton player now, does he want to move to Arsenal?
It's a big jump.
It's a tougher move to turn down anyway.
Yeah.
But the derbies were great. I loved playing in them. But unfortunately, every time we went to Liverpool, we were missing a Seamus or we were missing a Sylvan or a Fellaini. We missed one of our star players and we didn't have a massive squad to deal with that. And they were good. They had Torres who was on flames, they had Suarez who was on flames, Gerrard. Like, their team value would have been way above what ours was. Ours was, you know, whatever was top of the championship or available on Bosmans and stuff. And it worked. It made us a great unit, but in no games, it was really, really tough.
Can we just have a quick look at that goal?
It's exactly like I say, Jay. You got Gaz Nevin. It's an absolute belter.
To be fair, if you look for behind a goal, you see what Gaz is.
I know what he's saying. He's got technically, but you're not saving it still. It doesn't matter what Mignolet does there. The fact that it goes through a load of bodies, you don't see it until. You don't see. Look, players are there on 8 yards out. You ain't seeing it till 8 yards out, really. It's a world class strike, mate.
But it's funny because like most people tell me where they were. The two lads were in the gantry. Said they've literally spilt everyone's teas and coffees because it's in the 89th minute. Do you know, like, they're ready to go home and sulk as we do, don't we? And then thankfully,
Jez Yauka,
Can we, throw a couple of names at you? Can you just give us a few words about some of these players that you played with?
Because we'll start with this guy, Louis Saha.
He was unbelievable. If we wouldn't have got him. If he wasn't, I don't like to use the word injury prone, but they had his issues injury wise.
Yeah.
But it was a joke. He would chop left, he would chop right, he could head quick. But he was one of those players where he would break down 5 times a season.
I think his muscles were too strong for his body. They were too strong, so they would pull off and tear all the time.
Well, you'd have been shooting such a left foot, right foot.
Unbelievable.
I'm not saying he hit the target every time, but he didn't care. He was just so natural.
Yeah, lovely guy.
I think if he stayed fit, I mean, he'll go down as a really, really good Premier League striker.
Yeah, yeah.
But if he stayed fit, he'd have been...
Oh, God, yeah. Tim Howard?
Well, Tia, one of my closest friends at Everton. They might have argued, but I know he's a good mate because the amount of arguments we had on the pitch were phenomenal. But it was fine both ways, but it was gone. It was done. It was like literally, like we'd be literally abusing each other if he didn't come for a cross or I was expecting him to come out, but it worked. He got me out of trouble so many times. I helped him. Do you know, like it was what made us a unit.
Yeah.
You know, we had Sylvan there for Jolie in there, Bainsey, Hibbo, Phil. You know, like everyone knew that basically if someone, not even to say made a mistake, if someone got outfoxed or something happened, the rest of us had
to
swarm around it. He made some amazing saves.
Just those names you mentioned there. Yeah, Tim Howard, he's a cat. He's a cat,
well,
Tim Howard.
He's not the biggest Tim, but we call him like Tigger.
Spring.
Like, ding.
Yeah.
I was like, why don't you come for every cross?
Yeah.
And he's looking at me, I was like, go away. I'm not coming. I was like, okay, so.
Unbelievable athleticism.
I don't think he said go away, by the way. But I think it was a bit more of an aggressive one.
I know, another Tim, Cahill.
Well, Tim, he got everything out of what he had.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect. Like, he wasn't the quickest. Mm. He wasn't the most skillful. He didn't have the best touch. He wasn't the best finisher.
He's good in the air, though.
But it all worked. But I say he wasn't the biggest, but guess what?
Yeah.
His timing was a joke. And I don't mean just timing of being in the right area. I mean being in the right area, the right speed to be able to head it in any corner. And some of his headers were like shots.
Yeah.
But we had Bainsey, though. You can also thank Bainsey for it because he put loads of... And they say him again, he'd take it to a bicycle kick. Like, you think to yourself, you're not Ronaldinho, you're not that guy, but he was doing stuff and he led the fight from the front as well. So yeah. he was ahead of the midfield.
And
same again, the set standards. So everyone follows what someone else does. And that's what we had in our team. You know, even like the Osmonds, your Pinos. Everyone, as soon as one person did it, there was no excuses.
Everyone just followed on from
that. And he set the tempo, and he was one of the main reasons.
Scored a lot of goals, Tim, as well, didn't he? Yeah. I always think, like, from a football fan, he just always seemed to be in the right place, didn't he?
Well, so Frank Lampard was a different type of being in the right place, but Frank Lampard was an amazing footballer, and he wasn't in the right place by coincidence.
Yeah, of course.
He didn't score those goals. And even that, I learned when I went away with England, that not every time he nails a shot and it goes clean as a whistle, but every time it hits the goal, it goes in. And I'm like, how has he hit that in the corner from there? It looks like almost like a bubble, but the bubble's gone at still 60 mile an hour and it's still going in the bottom corner. And then he just did it 12 times in this one session. He was a joke.
Samuel Eto'o.
Well, we got a different Samuel. Like, I was expecting the Barcelona, like, quick, powerful pace. He wanted to play a free role.
Oh, wow.
Everton
wouldn't afford that, would they?
We couldn't.
Yeah.
But we needed a striker. And we can get Samuel Eto'o. Like, one of the world's best footballers ever. And the odd time that he actually went in behind and played like a nine, it was a joke. But he was drifting out to the left. We'd already had a left winger. He was coming to play in midfield. So it didn't help us in the situation. So that'd be the easiest way to describe his journey. And he wore number 5, because that's the only number that was available as well.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, which was strange. Obviously, Zidane and Bellingham can do it, but it just didn't quite look right with Eto'o.
And finally, Jack Rodwell. He actually came on trial, actually, Jack Rodwell did, at West Brom a few years back. Lovely lad.
We come back to Stoke. My Sheffield, when I was at Sheffield, he signed for Sheffield for 6 months the COVID season.
I think he's in Sydney now.
So he's gone to play for Sydney. Well, his wife's Australian, so that would have helped.
Yeah.
So Jack came through. Great looking lad, 6'2", left foot, right. He did this weird thing. So because obviously I used to play midfield back in the day. So you'd open up and you curl it with your right foot to go to the right fullback. So you'd do it.
Yeah.
So as you would do, if you were receiving the ball centre half, you'd open up to your left foot and you'd play it a curly toe, wouldn't you, to the left back.
Yeah.
He would do the opposite way around. He'd open up with his right foot and play with it outside of his left
foot.
And then vice versa, he'd come to his right, he's come from the right side.
And open out the other way with the other
foot. And that's normally, that's why quite a lot of right foot midfielders sometimes like to play on the left. So when they open up or centre halves, they can then zing a dive. He would then use the outside of his right foot. And he's coming through as like an 18-year-old. And it almost looks like he's taking a mick in training. So you give him the ball and he's doing it. But he had the ability and then he had an engine on him. But the only thing with him is, similar, like we spoke off air previously, like Victor Nietzsche being all sorts. I just don't know how much, like, inside him, if you could slap him before the game or make him mad or give him a dead arm or something, he'd be unplayable. But he was just like too nice. It was too nice on the pitch.
Just missing that.
Yeah, just
bit
missing
of grit.
That. So obviously, like Stevie G was from the same part of the world, but he had that grit. He went around 2-footing people in his earlier days. He set the tempo. Fantastic. He had all the ability in the world as well. But I don't think Jack had that. And like I say, and then, as I said before, we struggled for finances, and then Man City came along and offered us good money for him, and we had to get rid. I don't think they would have done. I think they would have tried to develop him and carry on, but he went, and then injury after injury, he went to a bigger club, as we've just said, didn't play the games or settle, and then he was never going to get back in there.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? Here's a player. Just wanted a quick one on. I think was criminally underrated. I think he got a bit more recognition the older we get. Phil Neville.
Well, Phil had a tough job because when David Moyes came in, he made him captain pretty much straight away.
Yeah.
And for a fresh player to come in, and there were some older players there, older pros there.
Yeah.
And Phil's a really nice guy. He's not horrible in any way. No. It would have been easier if he'd have been straight-faced, horrible, and just said, deal with it. He'd have almost been apologetic. Do you know, like...
Yeah.
But he played right-back, left-back, centre-mid. He was perfect for David Moyes because he thought the same. He had the same ideas, and he did what every young or any professional footballer, he acted perfectly. I don't think it was one day off. He probably had a bad training session, and if he did, he probably went and did some running to punish himself. He was that sort of person, you know, like he was such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And being the captain of that team, he led the way, and like you say, and then the knock-on effect, you know, if he's doing it and he's been at Man U, he's won this and all sorts, it's like, how on earth can I not? Don't get me wrong, everyone's got their own sort of tolerance levels and all sorts, but that was him, and he was brilliant. And he, towards the end, he understood he probably wasn't going to play as much and things like that, but a great role model and a perfect captain for us, especially in that time.
Fantastic.
Mate, that was world class.
That was great.
Phil, you're the boy, yeah, honestly, mate. Thank you so much. Well, we really appreciate that. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed that. It's nice having somebody who can just talk. It's like he did his own podcast then. It was brilliant.
Fantastic.
The Jagscast.
The Jagscast.
We'll go ahead of him, won't we?
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast.
Well done, boys.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.